We're holding on Kuf Nun He Omud Beis, seven lines from the bottom. We were talking about yesterday the dinim of that we said there are certain age restrictions on a person selling land that he inherited from his father. Mefarshim point out we don't davka mean his father. We mean anybody that he yashing from. We're just mentioning father because that's the typical case. We did talk about yesterday what the Alter Rebbe brings on it in Lakuta Torah, that it has to do with Makifim Ga'aba, that he has that at age 20 he gets a higher level of moichin that affects his midas, and therefore that would be a reason for it to actually use the expression of it. But as a matter of halacha, it doesn't really make a difference. And we said the idea is because a boy below that age doesn't really, a child really below that age, like bashtus to a girl as well, doesn't really have the full maturity to understand the value of land and to realize, as the Gemara is going to go on to say further now over here, they're going to think that coins, that money is more valuable and not realize that it's not so. So because of that, we're going to restrict them from selling such land. We talked about yesterday that if they got the land some other way, for example, they bought it, then the Rashbam would say that he's allowed to sell it. And Tosfos disagrees with that. And then as far as selling land, also we said there's Machlokas Rishonim on it, where Tosfos takes it as a given, and so do many other Rishonim, that Tosfos and many other Rishonim take it as a given, that there's no problem buying land at that age, whereas the Rimi Gash says no. In any case, so we went through all of that as far as the age, and we talked about also...
According to the Rimigash, what are the problems in buying land?
Basically, the Rimigash says that once we don't allow him to sell it for the reasons we discussed before, then we don't allow him to buy it either. He would hold that it's all part of one. That it's all part of one Indian. He's not to do transactions of any kind in real estate until he reaches that age.
And then real estate, according to him?
Yeah, according to him, you have to wait till you're 20. So as we discussed yesterday also, what if you have a child who's exceptionally sharp? What if you have a person who shows himself to be not so smart? And we have the story with the kid, with the Rava and the date pits and the Gila and all of that, where again you have the discussion between Rashbam and Tosfos, what was going on over there. Is it that in fact he was of age, and yet originally Rava thought, since he was acting like a shoita, means that he's not able to sell, or is it that we're talking about he was below age, and if he had shown himself to be sharp, then it would be a valid sale, which in the end Rava is saying apparently he does show himself to be, and the fact that he acted otherwise earlier was a matter of chutzpah, or is it, as Tosfos says, no, we're talking about he is of age, and still the question is whether he's a shoita or not. Okay. So, continuing on this topic, the Gemara says, Omer of Huna Bredi Rishua, Ula Eidos. Now, though, this that we're saying, that there is restrictions until he's 20 as far as selling and possibly as far as buying, that applies as far as that, as far as transactions like that where he's involved in. Ula Eidos, but as far as giving Eidos from age 13 and on, Eidosei Eidos, that is, Eidos is valid as long as he's at least 13 and he has Shtei Seiros, and then he can testify about anything that he saw at that point. He's not a shoita, after all. If he was a shoita, then we wouldn't. With a shoita also, by the way, you have, first of all, there can be an outright shoita, which the Gemara discusses in Chagiga, various simonim of it, that he rips his clothes and he destroys anything you give him, etc. And then you have, the Rambam, by the way, mentions, you have a different kind of shoita, where Parshat, he doesn't understand enough to be able to, you tell him two things that openly contradict one another, and he won't understand that he won't even realize that they contradict one another. So that's not the classic shoyte. He's still chayiv in mitzvahs, but nevertheless, you can't accept edus from such a person, because obviously then it's easy to mislead him into saying false edus. But here we're talking about where he's not either of those kinds of shoyte. He's a normal, healthy teenager. And he's got Shtei Seiros, so therefore, if one of Rebbe Yeshua says, when he says Eidos and Vestin, we can accept as Eidos. Oma Mar Zutra, but even then, Mar Zutra says, Vayamaran Elolim Metaltalin. That would only apply when he's giving Eidos about Metaltalin. Avala Makauta Eloy, but not when it comes to Eidos involving Karka. If he's testifying, for example, that Pliny bought land from Pliny, then we're gonna say we're not gonna accept that Eidos. Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim discussed, why should that be so? Are we concerned that he's gonna lie? Well, then why would we accept his Eidos by Metaltalin either? So Tosfos says, actually, no, we're not actually talking about Eidos that somebody sold land, because then, yeah, there's no reason we shouldn't accept his Eidos on that. He says that Reuven bought land from Shimon. Why not? That's not, you could say that he himself doesn't know the value of land. That doesn't mean that he wouldn't be able to say that Reuven sold the Shimon. So Tosfos explains, actually, we're talking about where we want Eidos from him about the value of a piece of land. So again, you have the same problem. He doesn't really understand. He thinks of money. He doesn't realize what land is truly worth. So Tosfos uses the expression Yoshum Oise Yosem Ishavya. He may value it at more than it's worth. So on the face of it, that's what it means. In other words, that he's going to value it at more than it's worth. Although the Bach talks about the proper Gilsa and Tosfos. Maosha says that actually what it means is he may just the opposite. It means that he may undervalue it in the sense that he's going to say that a larger amount of land is worth the same amount of money, which amounts to undervaluing it. The point is, therefore, so in other words, he won't realize, as opposed to when it comes to Metalpolin, first of all, he has an idea of the value of Metalpolin, especially because of the Metalpolin, he's into Metalpolin as much as he is to money, and he knows also that Metalpolin, he knows that Metalpolin are much more easily damaged and deteriorate more than land, so Tosfos says that's what it means. Therefore, when Mazutra is saying we don't accept his Eidos on land, it means that means as far as things that involve valuation of land. Now there are the Beis Yosef and the Bach learn the Rambam to be saying that a boy below 20 is always possible to give Eidos on land regardless. And then on the other hand, the Shach says that not. The fact is, you do have the points that Tosfos makes over here, and he in fact disagrees with the Beis Yosef and the Bach, and says that what the Rambam means is exactly what Tosfos is saying, that only when it comes to valuation of land do we not accept as Eidos. So the Gemara asks, Omelet of Ashi Lamazutra, Maishna Metalpolin, now why are you telling me what's different by Metalpolin that he can say Eidos? Dizvine Zvini, apparently the reason is because since he's able to freely buy and sell Metalpolin, therefore we can accept his Eidos on land, even when we're talking about, as Tosfos says, and as the Shach learns in the Rambam, even when we're talking about the valuation of Metalpolin. So Rav Ashi asks, in that case, by that logic, now we learn in the Mishnah in Gittin, hapo'oitus, young children, which means the Gemara says over there, not so young, but we mean like 6 or 7, once they start understanding the concept of the value of things, mimkochan mekach, or mimkoran memker, but metaltlin, then, midrabbanan, we say that they are able to buy and sell metaltlin, because then at that point, the chachamim make it that they need to be able to handle things on their own. Whether they have an apotropos or not, we'll get back to that point in a minute, but in any case, the Chachamim made a takana on their behalf that they're able to buy and sell. So if you're telling me the key thing is, whenever a person can buy and sell, then you are going to accept his Eidos on something. Hachinami de Eidos and Eidos. By that logic that you're saying, should we accept the Eidos of a 6 or 7 year old in Beis Din? And obviously not. So why should we say that because they're able to buy that? Why are we saying then that a teenager, because he's able to buy and sell metaltolin, that we should accept his Eidos? Some other answers. The difference is, because by Eidos you have another factor. You do also have, as the Pasuk says, the two men should stand in front of the Beis Din, and that refers to the Eidim, and therefore they have to be men. They have to be Gedolim in Halacha Veleka, and by Ketanim, you don't have that. So therefore, it doesn't matter that they can buy and sell. So he's a midget abanan. They still can't give edus. But here, what we're talking about, the person is a gadol. He's a teenager. He has shtei sairus and all that. The only problem is that he's not able to fully understand what land is all about and the value of it. Then we don't want to accept edus from him as far as land, or at least as far as the valuation of land. But we do accept his edus for other purposes, because after all, he is a gadol. But by a cotton, by these poitas, very nice. They can buy and sell. The fact is, we're still not going to accept their edus. Okay, the Gemara continues. Omer Amemar. Now Amemar says, now let's talk further about this teenager, about this boy below 20 who has shtei sairus, but we're saying that we don't want him to do certain kinds of transactions involving land because of the concern that he won't know the value of it. Omer Amemar umatnose matana. Amemar says, though, if he gives a matana, even of land, even though he yarshined it from his father, matnose matana, then his giving a gift of such land to somebody else would be valid. Now, so the Rashbam says that would apply no matter what. Even the Rashbam doesn't actually say one way or the other, but. Maybe we're talking about even when he inherited the property from his father. The Rashba says more explicitly that no, we're still not talking about, Amema is not talking about selling, about giving away land that he inherited from his father. That, just like we said, he can't sell it. We wouldn't be saying he could give it as a gift either. But we'll do it. So in that case, we'd be talking about at least as far as other land, where again, we discussed before that according to Tosfos, he might not be able to sell it, but at least, he would be able to give it as a gift for reasons that the Gemara is going to talk about soon. There's actually in Ksubas, there's a Hagois Oshri, there's a note over there on the Rosh's summary of the Halachas, which brings when he's less than 20, then he brings over there from Rishonim, that no, he would not be able to give a matana. Gurion Ashas, Rabbi Akiva Eger wonders over here. It says Tzorach Iyun Gadol, because our Gemara is saying, Amemar is saying that it would be a valid matana. So one consideration is that there does mention over there in that Hagaris Oshri that there is a difference in that regard whether he has an apotropos or not. If we say that if he has an apotropos, then the apotropos is supposed to be handling things for him, and then his matana would not be a valid matana. But still, it's sort of iyun because what he's saying over there in that Hagar is that it doesn't seem to matter whether he has an apotropos or not. Either way, it's no good. Whereas Amemar is saying over here that it is good. Okay. In any case, so there is that sorochiyun on it. But in any case, Amemar is saying that there is a case where his matana is a valid matana. Well, the question is why? Omaleh Rashi la Amemar. Hashta. Why? We should be able to make a kavachomer. Umazvini, madach, when he's selling, the mekabel zuzi, he's receiving money for it, showing, in other words, which is, he's acting in a way that a chocham would, he's getting something of value for what he's giving. Amrit Deloy, and we're saying that not, he can't sell karka at that age, and the problem is Duma Moizel Mazbin, because after all, the concern is that he might undervalue it, he might sell it for less than it's really worth, because as the Gemara is going to go on to say, he doesn't really understand, as we've been discussing all this time, and as the Gemara is going to spell out soon, that he doesn't really understand the concept of the value of land. Kolshikin matana. Well, then shouldn't a matana be all the more so? Delay moti levele midi. He's not getting anything. Here we talked about in the Gemara yesterday, for example, we had a case where a person, where Rava Paskin, that a boy who had sold nechassim, that it was no good because he acted like a shoyte, he was freeing his slaves and not getting anything in return, so he's giving away valuable assets for nothing. So Rav Ashi is saying the same thing over here, he's giving a matana. How can you say that it's valid? Doesn't it mean that he doesn't know what he's doing? Amalei, so Amema answers that, v'litai meich. Well, let's go according to your svara. You're saying that it's a matter of whether he's gaining or whether he's losing. And you're saying that the reason why the sale should be valid is because at least he's getting something of value for it. But you have to ask, Zovin chap shavi chamsha b'shita. Suppose that he sells and he gets a nice profit for it. He takes land that should have been worth five and sells it for six. So he made a nice profit. Actually, the Rashbam has the Girsa that he took land that was worth 4 and sold it for 5, which is an even larger fraction of profit. Hochinami, the zvini zvini, are you going to say because of that, that a sale would be valid? No, when we're saying that below a certain age, you can't sell, that's takonas hachamim, you can't sell nichse aviv or other nechosim as well, according to Tosfos, and that's that. The hachamim don't start making distinctions whether he made a nice profit on it or not. Rather, what it is the Chachamim know for the Chachamim know as an established point, the Yenuka Makara Daika Gabizuzi, that a child, and in this case a young man, a teenager, his mind is his das is close to money. In other words, money is something that easily attracts his attention. So what might happen is, so the reason why the Chachamim said he shouldn't sell below a certain age, if you say that it was valid, that it was a good sale, people who want to be able to buy his the properties that he inherited might go and jingle some coins in front of him, and he's going to be attracted by that, and he's going to go sell all the Nechassim that he inherited from his father. And therefore, we don't want to do that, and therefore, we don't want to allow that to protect him. And therefore, in general, by Takanas Chachamim, we say, Loy Plug, we're not going to start making distinctions between them, because then everybody will start coming up with their own distinctions, and the whole din will be bottled. So we say as a blanket rule that once we don't allow him to sell, because we're concerned about that, then we don't allow the sale, even if in this particular case, he made a nice profit.
Does that mean that he's going to be in Shuli here, someone jingling money, he's going to go sell his father's property?
No, well, we don't just mean somebody randomly jingling, but in other words, we mean that somebody is going to come to him and say, you know, I heard you inherited this land from your father, I'd like to buy it from you, and here he starts jingling some coins in front of him, this is what I have to offer you, and the boy may think to himself, you know what, that sounds good to me, and go and sell it, and not realize that land is a long-term investment, and no, you have to hold on to it.
Okay.
So Avo Gabi Matona, but Amema continues, when it comes to a Matona, there's no need for that. The fact is, nobody's jingling any coins in front of him, so why would he be giving a Matona? He loved the Havalei Hanamine, if it weren't for the fact that he got some kind of Hana, some kind of great Hana from the other person, Loi Havi Yohavalei Matona, he wouldn't have given him the Matona in the first place. So therefore, we have more reason to allow his matana to go through Omri Rabbana. And therefore, the Chacham said, Tehevi Matnose Matana, we should allow his matana to be a matana de la evidu lahu mili. This way, people will be willing to do favors for him. You're going to have, after all, he's a boy. He's not quite yet 20. He still needs to depend on other people. So he's not fully independent. So we want that people should be willing to do things for him, and in return he'll be able to reciprocate to them by giving them a gift. So there's no concern of people jingling coins in front of him, because there's no coins involved. So therefore the Chachamim are going to allow it. So, and in fact, when the Rambam brings this halacha, he brings, first of all, it would have been hanoya gdoila, well, for the Rashbam also says hanoya gdoila. We're not just talking about stama hanoya, that somebody said something nice to him or something, but pashtus, we're talking about somebody did to him a great hanoya. But the Rambam also points out, it's a dover she'inin motzi tomid, it's something not very common that somebody should do to him such a tremendous favor that he should reciprocate by giving them land. In fact, the Rashba extends that point. Here we were saying before that the Yad Ramah and many other Rishonim say that this din, that all this time that we've been talking about, Valimka B'nichse Aviv, applies not only to when he yarshin from his father, but from other people as well. And we just use the father because that's the more common case. The Rashba actually disagrees with that point. He says, based on what the Rambam is saying, that's a matter of Dovash and Motzi Tamid, then by the same token, it's not a Dovash HaMotzi that a child inherits from other relatives, and therefore in those cases he should be able to sell it. So taking this idea of it being a Dovash HaMotzi and extending it further. Whereas most of the Rishonim disagree with that point, and they say, yes, the gift would be a gift, like we're saying over here, but the sale, it doesn't matter whether he yarshin from his father or from anybody, we would still say the same rules, and we mention the father only because that Gibra Kosa Behoiva, because we talk about the more common case. Okay. Tosfos, by the way, points out a side thing over here. If we're talking about that he sold land that was worth 5 for 6, or your, according to the Rashban's Girsa even more, land that was worth 4 for 5, which is also the Rabbi Nagershim's Girsa, wouldn't there be an issue of, wouldn't there be an issue of Aynah anyway? So it wouldn't be a valid sale because there wouldn't be a valid sale because you would have Aynah. To be exact, Maharsha says, I mean, at exactly a difference of 20%, you have a machlokas, whether there'd be a na or bittul ma or bittul nekach. But the point is, in other words, why is the Gemara using those figures? So first Tosfos says, okay, the Gemara is just using those figures as an example. Doesn't davka mean those exact figures? Because you're right, then even with an adult, there might be bittul nekach involved. Also, there's a few other possibilities. Tosfos, Rabbi Natan learns here and in other places in Tosfos that there's no Aynah when it comes to land. The whole, all these dinim of Aynah and Bitul Mekach and all of that don't apply when you sell, when you're buying and selling land. There can also be a case that we learned about in Bava Metzia when we learned all the dinim of Aynah, where he knows that it's worth less and still he's willing to buy it at an inflated price. And also you could have, again, if there's exactly a difference of 1/6 of a year, there's not bittul mekach, there's just, that he would have to return the overcharge. So for all those reasons, the Gemara is not worried about the question that the sale may be bottle because of Aynah. Rather, the point is, in other words, on the face of it, we're saying, look, he made a nice profit, and yet we're saying the sale is not valid because loy plug, the chachamim don't, are not going to make such a distinction within their takana. Once we say he can't sell at that age, then he can't sell, and that's that because of the problem that they may jingle money in front of him, so therefore we're going to apply that even no matter how, even if he made a nice profit on it. However, Abbei Mar is saying a gift is different. Okay. Going on more about this matter of the age that a person has to be to do various things. So all this time, basically, we've been saying when it comes to selling property that he inherited from his father, and according to most Rishonim, from others, and according to Tosfos, even property that he bought himself, he has to be at least 20 years old. So now let's talk, on the other hand, for most dinim and halacha, we just said before, as far as Eidos, it's enough that he's 13 for anything for Eidos involving the Taltalin. So let's talk more in generally about that whole concept of what age and what maturity level does a person need for various dinim. Now, one thing is also, we talked about the idea that we talked about something called chazaka de rova, namely that rova points out in the Gemara and Nida. We have a chazaka that generally a boy 13 and a girl 12 has shtei sairis, and therefore we don't need to check them. And even in fact, sometimes we even say if we do check and we don't find, sometimes we might say that they had them and then they fell out. However, we only say that, first of all, we only say that for things that are banon, and second of all, we don't say it to be, second of all, as Tosfos points out, and as we're going to discuss over here in the Gemara, we don't do that to be makel, only to be machmer. So one thing is, so for example, a boy, 13, had daven by the Yomer, and lead a mezuman, and do various other things, because we assume that he has shtei sairis, and we don't need an actual examination, because those are things that are banon. But here, we're going to talk about, for things that are daraisa, we do need to actually examine. In the case of a boy, then we have where necessary we have men examine him, and in the case of a girl that Abraham points out, we have women examine her and then report the findings to Beis Din. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel Bodkin LeKiddushin. We do have to check, even when a boy is 13 or a girl is 12, that's not enough. Chazaka de Rava is not going to work for the following things. We're going to have to check whether they actually have shtei sairis. L'kiddushin, as far as kiddushin, so that would mean, in other words, that the Rashbam says, for example, let's say Reuben was Makadish a woman, and then Shimon was Makadish her as well. We have to actually check whether Reuben had shtei sairis or not. And if he does, then we say that Shimon's kiddushin are not able to be chal. And if we don't find him to have shtei sairis, then we have a suffolk, and then we would say that the kiddushin of either one of them might be valid misuffolk, and then she'd need a get misuffolk from both of them. So we do need to check that. Tosfos actually learns, it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to check before Kiddushin. It just means, like the Rashbam is saying, if we end up with a suffix like that, involving a second Kiddushin, then we would need to check the first one. On the other hand, the Rambam learns that you always have to check before Kiddushin as well. That would be primarily as far as the boy. As far as the girl, you don't necessarily need, well, if she's a ketana, then her father can accept kedushin on her behalf. If she's a gdola, then she would have to accept it on her own. So therefore, there'd be that consideration as well. So you do have to check as far as kedushin, legerushin, the same thing as far as divorce, which the Gemara is going to explain what the case is, because if we know already that he was a god, that he and she were gedolim at the time of the kedushin, then obviously they are at the time of the gerushin. So why would we need to check again? We'll discuss that in the Gemara soon. One thing is, in any case, Tosfos points out that we would have to check again. So we can't rely on the chazaka, but when we have a case, we have to check because of gerushin. Then we would have to check by both of them, by both a boy and a girl, and check whether they have shtei sairus. But the Rashash actually wonders why. I mean, by gittin, a woman is able to receive a get when she's a ketana. So maybe we shouldn't have to check her. Maybe we should only have to check him. And in fact, the Yad Ramah says as much. That yes, it does not, not that we would have to check both of them, we would only have to check the boy. The Chalitza, we also need to do such examinations as far as Chalitza, because Chalitza can only be done, as the Gemara is going to point out, only if both of them are Gdolim. Ulumi Unin, and vice versa. If the girl wants to do Miun, where she was Niskadish, by her mother or her brothers or any other relatives when she was a Tana, and now she wants to do Miun, and we need to know whether she has Shtei Sairus, because once she does, it's too late to do Miun. So all of those things, we do need a physical examination. We can't just rely on the Chazaka, that they have Simonim, because when they're of the age, because we can't use that Chazaka for things Daraisa, and we also can't use it to be Makel. Tosfos does point out in this connection that actually we learned this way back in Yevamos, for example, that and in Ksubos, that actually there is also a factor involved over here whether her husband already had relations with her after she was 12. If he did, then we have to be concerned that she may have already had simonim and then they fell out. So there is that factor as well. However, the limka b'nichse avim, so all of those things will apply once they're 12 or 13 respectively, and they have shtei sairus, then that's good enough. However, the limka b'nichse avim, but the sel nechosin that he yarshin from his father, and again, according to most rishonim, also that he yarshin from any other person, and according to Tosfos, also anything that he bought himself, ad shehei ben esrim, then as we discussed in the previous sugya, he has to be at least 20 years old. All right, the Gemara asks now, as far as gerushin, why do we need to check? The chikivin de bedakna le kedushin, once we already examined him and or her, as far as kedushin, and we found that they already have simonim, le gerushin lomali, why would we need to check them again when it comes to gerushin? If they were gdolim at the time of the kedushin, then obviously they were already gdolim when it comes to the gerushin as well. So we just said before that the Rambam learns that it means that you always have to check before the kedushin, and therefore that makes the Gemara's question very comprehensible. Then why are you checking now? When it comes to the gerushin, if already you had to check by the kedushin? But according to Tosfos, that it doesn't mean that, according to the Rashbam, that it doesn't mean necessarily you had to always check before kedushin. We're talking about only if there was a case of a second kedushin. Then what's the Gemara's question? Why are we checking by gerushin? What we mean is you check by kedushin, but if you didn't check by kedushin, then you have to check when it comes to gerushin. Tosfos also wonders anyway why would he anyway need to if he was a cotton by the kedushin and the kedushin weren't chal, then he's not going to need a get anyway. And if he was already a gadol by the kedushin, then again he's already obviously a gadol and he's able to divorce her. So Rabbeinu Yonah explains, at least as far as the second question, that listen, you still. What if you find that you don't have shtei sairus, but we still don't want her to be possible to a kohen unnecessarily by receiving a get? And people are going to think, for example, that later on, if he's Makadosh or sister, it's not Chal because she'd be an Erva and so forth. So you have a number of reasons why we would want to make sure that that he's not just going to be giving a get, which will turn out to be useless. In any case, though, so the question is, though, the Gemara's question is that if we're talking about a regular case where there was Kiddushin, and now there's Gerushin, then why would we need to be examining him anyway? We already checked when there was Kiddushin, and we found that he was a Gadol, so now there's no reason to check for Gerushin. The answer is, Lo Nitzucha Elo LeYibum. The answer is, the Kiddush would be when you have to check is when he didn't marry her in the regular way to begin with, but rather when there was Yibum to begin with. So now it's possible for them to be married even when he's a katan without kiddushin, the tnan, as we learn in a Mishnah. Ben teisha shanim v'yem echad shabal yavim, when a boy 9 years old or older has relations with his yavama, kna, then he's koina her as his yavama, that in noisin get that she yigdal, however, he's still not going to be able to give her a get until he becomes a gadol. To be exact, actually, we learned back in Yevamos that we say that when a 9 year old, when a boy below bar mitzvah has relations with his Yevama, we said actually it has the din only of Mimer. It's not considered a full kinyan in the sense where there she only needs a get. Actually, she would also need chalitza as well. So here we're talking about that he had relations with her again after he became a gadol. Therefore, what we're saying, he is going to need a get. It's true, there's going to be a chalitza as well, but the fact is, in order to give that get, we're going to have to make sure that he's a gadol, so that would be the case. We didn't check him when there was kiddushin, because there was no kiddushin. There was only the bia of a yavam with his yavama. Now, when it comes to gerushin, now if it comes to, he's going to give a get. And again, we're saying, the Yad Ramah explains, we're talking about that they didn't have relations, so therefore there is going to need to be a get and chalitza as well, but nevertheless, for him to give that get, we are going to have to examine him and see whether he's a gadol. So that explains why we need to check him when it comes to gerushin. What about l'chalitza? Why did we need to mention the point that we need to check him as far as chalitza? The point of that, now once we already said we need to check him for gerushin, then we already understand that the same thing would apply to chalitza. There'd be no reason to mention it separately. Says the Rashbam. So the point is, the Gemara says, La Pukim Yedir Rabbi Yossi. The point is to tell us, not like Rabbi Yossi, the Omar Ish Kosim Aparsha, where Rabbi Yossi says, it's true that a boy below Bar Mitzvah and below Shtei Cyrus is not able to do Chalitza, because the Pasuk says Ish, the Pasuk calls him a man, and that implies that he has to be a Gadol. Aval Isha, Bein Gdola Bein Ktana, but Rabbi Yossi says when it comes to the woman, when it comes to Chalitza, it doesn't matter whether she's a Ktana or a Gdola, because it doesn't say the word Isha over there. So Kamash Malan, therefore, no, Shmuel is telling us to Makshin and Isha L'Ish, with Deloitte Rabbi Yossi, that no, we do make a Hekesh between the man and the woman once we say that he has to be a Gadol, then she has to be a Gdola as well. So when we're saying that we have to check, we have to check as far as Chalitza, the point is not only that we have to check him, whether we have Shtei Cyrus, we have to check her as well. Don't think to rely on Rabbi Yossi that we don't need that. In fact, Tosfos points out that that's what the Gemara is saying, that since we're mentioning over here, Boidkin, the Kedushin, the Gerushin, and this whole list over here, so we all of them seem to imply, as much as possible, both to the man and to the woman. And therefore, the Gemara's understanding over here also, that it means we're checking the woman, and why would we need to, is because not like Rabbi Yossi. Okay. What about Ulamiunin? Why do we need to mention it about Miun? Again, shouldn't it be obvious that Miun, by definition, can happen only before she has Shtei Cyrus? And the answer is like Pukimid Rabbi Yehuda, because Rav Shmuel wants to tell us to not go like Rabbi Yehuda. The Omar, where he says in the Mishnah in Nida, where he says that, so the Chachamim say that she can only do Miun until she has Shtei Cyrus. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda argues and says, Ad she yirbesh shachar. Rabbi Yehuda says, only when you have more black, the hair, the Shtei Cyrus that we're talking about, and eventually the more hair that develops over there, is typically black or dark in color. We even touched on the other day, Tosfos had mentioned a possibility that maybe hairs, that maybe white hairs, wouldn't even be considered a simen. But in any case, even if we don't say that, to the normal hair color, in that area tend on many people is black, so therefore so Rabbi Yehuda uses that expression. And the point is that Rabbi Yehuda says it's not just enough to have shtei sairus. For her to not be able to do miyun anymore, there has to be a larger amount of hair there. To be exact, the Gemara says over there, what it means is that the hairs have grown long enough that when they're lying flat, it makes it look like a large area is covered with hair. The point is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that even after she develops what are considered shtei sairus for most other purposes in halacha, she could still do miyun. So Shmuel wants to tell us not. Kamash Malon Belek Rabbi Yehuda, so he wants to tell us not like Rabbi Yehuda. The fact is, as soon as she has shtei sairus as defined in all other areas of halacha, then she can't do miyun anymore. The general definition for that purpose is, the Gemara mentions, when the hair is long enough that you can bend over the tip of it to touch the root, then it's definitely large enough. Then you can have where it's a little shorter than that. It's short. It's long enough to be cut with scissors, to be able to be grasped by the blade of a scissors and cut, but not long enough to bend like that. Then you have a suffix on it. Then it's a suffix whether it's considered long enough for shtei sairus. Then we have to consider them a katan slash gadol for whatever purpose is more of a chumrah. You consider them a katan or a gadol respectively. For example, they wouldn't be able to do chalitza until it's long enough for it to be bent over. But the point is, not like Rabbi Yehuda, who says it would need to be even longer than that. Actually, Tosfos wonders, Tzorech Iyun, whether Rabbi Yehuda would say his din in general, or whether his din about the hairs being longer is only by Miyun. In any case, Shmuel is saying the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. Now, when Shmuel had finished off V'limke b'nichse avav ad sheyehe ben esrim, when Shmuel had said that, when Rabbi Nachman had said in the name of Shmuel that he has to be 20 before he can sell his father's property. So that would be La Pukim, the Manda Amra Ben Shmona Esrei. That comes to tell us, not like the opinion, which we said before, we had a Machloikas, Rava and Rabbuna Bachinina, whether he needs to be 18 or 20. So now Rabbi Nachman is telling us in the name of Shmuel that in fact it is 20. Okay. So now the Gemara summarizes. Let's roll up a number of halachas that we've been talking about on the last daf and a half or so. First of all, the hilchsa, one halacha is, we discussed the point, what happens, for example, we're saying that he has to be 20 to sell nifse aviv, does that mean that he's already 20, that he's already passed his 20th birthday, or that he already reached his 20th birthday, or does it mean that he's in his 20th year? We had a machloikas of Rava, and we had a machloikas of Rava, and Rav Nachman, and Rava Barav Shila, that both in the name of Rav Nachman. So first of all, the Gemara says, first of all, the halacha is not like Rava in that. The halacha is that during that year is still considered like before that year. So when he's in his 20th year, it has the same din as when he was in his 19th and 18th and so forth. He can't yet sell nichsei of it. So that's first of all. Second of all, the hilchsa pigidol b'menashe. Second of all, the halacha is like the situation where Gidol b'menashe sent a question to Rava, and Rava, we had a case of a girl who was 14 years old and knows tiv maso matan. She understands very well about how buying and selling works, and then we said that she is able to freely buy and sell, because when we said we had the rule about 20 years old, wasn't talking about where she's particularly sharp and is really on the ball and knows what she's doing. So the halacha is like that, that in fact you do have that kind of exception to the rule. The hilchsak mazutra, then the halacha is like mazutra, where we said that we do accept the edus of a teenager as long as he has shtei sairus, but not as far as karka, not as far as the valuation of karka according to Tosfos and possibly the Rambam, and or karka b'chlal according to another way of understanding the Rambam. So the halacha is like mazutra, that we accept his edus from a talkman, but not for those various aspects of karka. The hilchsa ka meimar, then the halacha is like a meimar, that if he gives a matana, that it is valid, because we said whoever it is that he gave the matana to must have done him some tremendous favor, and we don't have the concern, as we said before, about people are going to jingle coins in front of him and get him to sell cheaply. The hilchsa could Rav Nachman, Omar Shmuel, Bakulu, and as far as the whole list of things that Rav Nachman said in the name of Shmuel, as far as Kiddushin, Gerushin, Chalitza, and Miyonin, Volimka, Minichse Aviv, all of those, the halacha is like that, we do in fact have to examine them to see whether they have shtei tzairis in order to be able to do kiddushin or gerushin or, well, according to the Rashbam and Tosfos, we don't have to check them for kiddushin unless a suffix comes up, but we have to check them for gerushin, where no examination was done before, and we have to check them as far as whether they can do chalitza and vice versa, whether she can do miyun, we have to make sure she doesn't have shtei tzairis yet. Getting now back to matters of matnas shchivmera. So all this time we've been saying that a matnas shchivmera, divrei shchivmera ksuvin v'chimesurin damu, that when a shchivmera says something, it's considered as though it's written and sealed. So therefore, so no shtar is needed, no kinyan is needed. We talked about the other day that with a regular matnas shchivmera, in fact, a kinyan may even hurt things, et cetera, et cetera. But now we're going to see in our Mishnah that that is actually a matter of machloikas. A person is giving out his nechosim verbally. He's saying that I want this thing to go to this person, that person to that thing to go to that person. Rabbi Loza Omer, so now again, as we've been talking about throughout the last few dafim, you can have, there can be matnas shchivmera, and there can be matnas bari, a regular gift that a person gives when he's healthy. So Rabbi Loza Omer, Rabbi Loza says, Echad Bori v'Echad Masukan, doesn't matter for that purpose whether he's healthy or whether he's dangerously ill. Either way, it's not going to be enough for him to just say it. Rabbi Loza does not hold of the concept of Dibir Shtimirak Ksuvin v'Chimisurin. So there's going to need to be some kind of kinyan. And therefore, nechosim sheyesh lahen achrayus. So therefore, nechosim which have achrayus, which as we explained many times before, means karka, which is called yesh lahen achrayus, because people typically sell it with achrayus, and because there's achrayus on it as far as a malva or other kind of creditor collecting from it. So those kinds of things, you need the regular kind of kinyan that you would need for karka. Nikin v'kesef v'shtar v'chazaka. They would have to pay money for it, or have a shtar, or do chazaka. The regular kinds of kinyanim that you would use to acquire land. So it's not just enough that he said so. We actually need to have a kinyan. And the Rashbam points out, first of all, a couple of things in this. First of all, that would mean that would apply. Now we discussed in a few blocks ago that there's a difference between a regular matnas shchivmera versus metzava machmas misa. Within that, you have the distinction between where he's sick in bed and we see that, and therefore we write out, and therefore he's giving out his instructions, but he never actually says in so many words that he's doing it because he's about to die. We see the circumstances and we realize because of that. Versus you have metzava machmas misa, where he himself says or clearly implies something that he's doing it because he's about to die. We have the case, for example, a few days ago of Rav Dimi and his sister, where she was krechting over the fact that I'm going to die soon, and you have other examples like that. So there you have where he's metzava machmas misa, he's explicitly saying that what I'm doing has to do with the fact that I'm about to die. So now the Rashbam says that Rabbi Lozer's din, that he says you require a kinyan, would be even in that case. And we know that because further on in the Mishnah, we're going to bring a case, which we learned in the Gemara a few days ago, was talking about Mitzava Machmas Misa, and yet Rabbi Lozer is going to say that you need a kinyan for it to say that it's going to need a kinyan to take effect. Second of all, also the Rashbam says, given that Rabbi Lozer is saying that means, in other words, you need a kinyan, and without that, the matnas shchivmera won't take effect, and therefore the person who was supposed to receive it will not in fact receive it if there was no kinyan. Well, then the flip side of it would also be, the Rashbam says, then that means that if it was a matnas shchivmera and he does recover, then he's not getting back the nechosim, because the fact is there was a kinyan. And once there was a kinyan, then it has the force of not being able, of not having to be returned. Agoras Habach actually discusses a little bit about that, but this is what the Rashbam is saying, and he ends up saying that on the face of it, maybe there would be a difference between whether it was Matana B'mitzvah or Matana B'kuloi, but the Rashbam himself doesn't seem to be making that distinction. All right. So anyway, so the Rebbe Elazar continues in the Mishnah. So given that he says the words of a shtimra are not k'ksuvin l'chemesudin, then we need an actual kinyan. So that would mean, therefore, so in the case of karka, they need to be koine in one of the regular ways that you koine karka. As far as nechosim she'en la'an achrayis metaltlin, they're going to need to do one of the regular kinds of kinyan. For example, meshicha. He says elam meshicha, but it doesn't mean exclusively meshicha. It means both with karka and metaltlin means that any of the valid methods of kinyan, but you do need some kind of kinyan. Hagoyes Abach adds the words over here, which that the Chachamim said that no, it's enough to just say it. That by both nechosim should yeshla and achrayus, and not, it's enough for him to say it verbally. Omruloi, so the Chachamim said to Rabbi Elazar, we can prove to you that you don't need a kinyan for a matnas shchivmana, or as the Gemara had said before, for mitzava matnas misa. Maisa be'iman shal b'nei roichel. It happened with the mother of the children of roichel. So her husband's name was roichel. Roichel usually means a peddler, but here it's an actual name. So their mother, shahoisa choila, she was sick. But omra, and she said, tnu kvinasi livni. She says, give my kvinasi to my daughter. We talked about the other day what kvinasi is. The Rashbam had translated it with a French word that meant like a clasp or a brooch or something like that. Something that you would use to keep the collar of a shirt or a dress closed. Tosfos discusses over here and then based on other Gemaras and says that no, that actually that a kvina would actually be a shawl or something like that. In any case, so she was saying that should be given to her daughter specifically, even though usually her sons would yarshin it along with all the rest of the property. So she said to do that. This kvinasi, whatever it is, a clasp or a shawl, was worth 12 mana, which is a large amount of money. Umesa, she died, and the Chachamim upheld what she said. Now there was no kinyan or anything over there. And yet we see that it worked. So the Chachamim say to Rabbi Elazar, you see, you don't need a kinyan. The Rashbam points out, now there's a couple of possibilities. This might have been a matnas chimera b'loy shir, where she's giving away everything. In other words, we could say that this is the last thing that she had after she had already given away everything else, and therefore maybe Rabbi Elazar would agree in that case, you don't need a kinyan. And Rebbe Elazar is going to answer, in other words, that I agree with you that in general, that Rebbe Elazar is going to say that generally it wouldn't work in this particular case. It worked because of a knas on that family, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. So one way of understanding is that Rebbe Elazar would agree that you don't need a kinyan as long as the person died. The other possibility is that it was a matana b'miktsas, and therefore and that would mean Rebbe Elazar says even by mitzava machmas misa, as we learned a few days ago in the Gemara, even when she explicitly says I'm about to die, then nevertheless the same din would apply. Anyway, we see the Chachamim say that they didn't need a kinyan or anything like that, and it still worked. So Rabbi Elazar answers that was a special case. Bnei Roichel tikbrein iman. These children of Roichel deserve to be buried by their mother. In other words, forget about inheriting from their mother. They actually deserve to die young because they were Rishoyim, as we're going to see in the Gemara, what they did wrong, particularly, and their mother ought to bury them. So therefore, so the Chachamim penalized them and took the skvina away from them and gave it to their sister, who, we're going to see what they did wrong, but Pashtus, her sister, wasn't doing that, and therefore they penalized them. That wouldn't show, says Rebbe Elazar, that in a normal case, you shouldn't require a kinyan. There is, by the way, there's different gersois over here, whether the word is, Tnu kvinasi libni, give it, or whether the Rashba has a girsa and says even without the word tnu, it means that he obviously meant that it should go to her. Hagoyes Habach mentions another way, or there may even be a girsa tinosin, it should be given, meaning she's not telling them explicitly to give it, but she's saying it should be given. In any case, the point is, the Chachamim are saying that's good, obviously that's good enough, and Rebbe Elazar is saying that was a special case because it was a knas. So that's Rebbe Lazar is pointing out that you can't learn anything from that case. But where does he have? He says, on the contrary, I have a case that shows that kinyan actually had to be made for a matnas shechina. Tanya, omalahen Rebbe Lazar the Chachamim. So Rebbe Lazar said to the Chachamim. Now Tosfos actually has a long discussion over here that in the Mishnah, it's supposed to be Rebbe Lazar, not Rebbe Eliezer. The next Mishnah at the bottom of our Amud has a Machloikas, Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Yeshua, about another point related to this. If it was Rebbe Eliezer in our Mishnah over here, then it might have combined together instead of being presented as two separate Machloikas. So therefore, Tosfos says it has to be Rebbe Lazar. And in that case, it means throughout the Sugya over here, whenever we mention Rebbe Eliezer, then it would really have to be Rebbe Lazar. So, Tanya, Omelan, Rebbe Eliezer, or Rebbe Lazar, or Chachamim, I'll prove to you, to the contrary, that you do in fact need to make a kinyan, even by a matnas shechina. Maisa b'mei roini echad, it happened with a yid from Meron, in the north of Eretz Yisrael, elsewhere where this Hagros Habach points out, that in Masechta Kedushin, where it also brings the story, then Rashi has the girsa over there, Madoni, which would mean a yid from a city of Modon, which is also the name of a city in Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, Shahoya b'Yerushalayim, he was living in Yerushalayim, v'hoyu l'metaltlin harbe, he had a lot of metaltlin back home, obikish litna matana, and he wanted to give them as a matana. How is he going to do it if he's not present for them to do mashicha or anything like that? Omruloi, so the Chachamim told him, ein lehem takana ad sheyikna al gav karka. The only way it's going to work that the makabel, that the people, that the recipients are going to receive them, are going to be able to get them validly, is if you makna it to them agav karka, kinyan agav, as we've talked about before. Actually, when the Gemara in Kedushin brings the story, then it discusses there are various other possibilities that could have been done. For example, they could have done kinyan sudur, but there was nobody available to do a kinyan sudur with him. There were other possibilities, but in any case, the most straightforward way, the Chacham said, that's not going to require anybody else to be involved, is that you makna to them agav karka. So now the point is that Rebbe Lazar is saying he was a shivra. And again, the Makablim weren't there, so therefore they couldn't do a Kenyan Sudur or anything like that with him. So what do you do? Now what does he need property in Yerushalayim for? He's living in Yerushalayim right now, but he doesn't really need any karka of his own. But he went and bought a piece of land of a seller. Now that can mean, in other words, it can mean a piece of rocky ground that's a rock, it's not suitable for planting or anything, or it can mean a piece of land to the value of a seller. Whatever, the Rashbam learns the first way, that it means it's rocky land, so this way he's able to buy it cheap. He's only buying it for the purpose of using for kinyan agav. So he bought to base Salah Samoch Yerushalayim, near Yerushalayim, the Omar, and then he says, Spoina Leploini, the north part of this little piece of land I'm giving to Ploini. The Imoy Meyatsonu Meyachovius, and together with it is going to go 100 sheep and 100 barrels of wine. Or Droyma Leploini, the southern part of this piece of land is going to go to Ploini, the Imoy Meyatsonu Meyachovius, and with it is going to go 100 sheep and 100 barrels, and that works on the grounds of Kinyan Agav, the Gemara and Kedushin, when it brings this, explains that we see from this the metaltlin don't have to be located on the karka. The Gemara has the whole discussion over there when it comes to kinyan agav. Do the metaltlin need to be on the karka or not? Here we have a proof that not, because the metaltlin are elsewhere, up in Meron or Madon or wherever it is that he lived, and the land over here is in Yerushalayim, and it's a tiny piece of land that's not going to fit all those things, and yet it works. Umes, and then he died, but Kimu Chachamim Esvarav, and the Chachamim upheld what he said and gave away and had these people take the respective sheep and barrels of wine. So you see, says Rebbe Lazar, that you need an actual Kenyan, because here the guy was a Shrivana, and yet we're saying that he needs Kenyan Agav. Omru loy, but the Chachamim answered, Misham Raya, you bring a proof from there? They only bori haya. The seller was a bori. He wasn't a shchidmera at all. He was a bori, and then later on, yes, he died, but at the time, he was a bori, and therefore, of course, he needs a kinyan. That doesn't show that a shchidmera should need a kinyan. Okay. Now, in the Mishnah, we said that the Chachamim had tried to bring a proof from the case of the Kvinasi, with the case of the children of Reuchel, and Rebbe Lazar answered back that, you know what, those sons deserve to die anyway, and we can't learn anything from what they did. Adrabba would say the Chachamim penalized them, Hefker based in Hefker. So, my time of Kolayat Lahu. Why is Rav Elazar cursing them? Now, the Bach points out, you could just answer, they were Rishoyim. What's the thing is that then the Chachamim would know that. If they were notorious Rishoyim, then the Chachamim would know that, and they wouldn't even be bringing a proof from that case at all. The fact that only Rav Elazar points this out shows that whatever they're doing is not so obviously wrong. So what is it that they were doing that Rav Elazar holds against them? Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mekayme Koitzim Bekerem Hayu. What they were doing is, There were thorns growing in their vineyard, and they were allowing them to stay there, where we know you're not allowed to plant, you're not allowed to have grain or vegetables grow in your vineyard, and Rav Elazar holds the same thing is true as far as thorns as well. So for Rav Elazar, Latayme, Rav Elazar is going according to his Svara, Ditznan, as we learn in Mishnah, and Kilayim, Hamakayim Koitzim Bekerem, if a person allows thorns to remain growing in his vineyard, Rav Elazar Omer, Kiddush. Rav Elazar says that it's actually also Daraisa, and therefore Kiddush, the expression Kiddush, the word Kodesh, you usually understand to mean holy, but really it means off limits. Really it means separated. So it's also used when the Pasuk describes the mitzvah, the Issur of Kalaya Kerem, it says Pentikdash, that it will become Kodesh, meaning that it's going to be also Bahana, it's going to have to be burnt. So now Rav Elazar says, that if you have thorns growing in a vineyard, that's considered kilayim, just as much as if you had grain or vegetables plant there, and the nearby vines and the vegetable itself become usur. Bahana, and you have to burn them. Bahamim la kiddush eladavar shekamoyim akaimin. The Chum say no. The kiddush, this concept of it becoming usur bahana, would only apply to things that people normally allow to grow in a vineyard. Because and the Chacham said b'shleima kaukum chazi. So for example, if he had saffron growing over there, sure, we can understand why that would be kalayim because it's usable. Alakosim l'may chazi, but they would say, what would you use thorns for? It's just a useless weed, and therefore the Chacham say it wouldn't be enough. Maybe you should pull it out if you see it, but it's not going to be enough to make the vineyard to make the vineyard also bahana. These words are in Hagoras. Bach takes them out, and in fact, the Gemara elsewhere when the Gemara in Shabbos brings this point, it doesn't mention that point at all because it's not really relevant. The point is that such plants are not usable by regular people, and therefore there'd be no reason for it to be a problem of killing. Well, Amar Rav Chanina, my time in the Rav Elazar, where why does Rav Elazar hold that thorns are a problem? Doesn't he agree with the Chachamim that thorns are generally useless? The reason is, Shekhen Ba'arviya Mekayimin Kotzin B'Sadas L'Gmalehen, because in Arabia, where Jews, or there were Jews living at the time, they have lots of camels, and they keep thorns and plants like that in their fields in order for their camels to eat it. So in Arvia, it's considered a useful plant. So therefore, he says that you have to take that into consideration. Even in other places in the world where it's a useless plant, it's a weed, then nevertheless it would be enough to assur the vineyard. Whereas the Chum say you go according to the majority of the world, the majority of Jews don't live in Arabia, the majority of Jews don't have camels, and therefore you don't have to worry about it, and therefore you don't have to worry about it. The Mitzvah actually discusses that, you know, here we have, sometimes we say, bot l'gaita etzel kol adam. Sometimes we say we do have to take into consideration the minig of a certain place. So he explains, in other words, basically what it is you have, if we're talking about that people are doing something very, very strange and weird, then we would say bot l'gaita etzel kol adam. But if we're saying that if you have something, let's say, where some people do it, but most people don't want to do that, then we don't say bot l'gaitam, then we say that sometimes, then we say that fine, the people who do this particular thing, they continue to do it, and for them it's a valid minhag, and it has implications, la halacha, but everybody else is not obligated to follow them. Then we have a case over here. The reason why nobody else grows thorns in their vineyards is not because if they had camels, they wouldn't want them, but because most people don't have camels, and therefore it's not worth it for them. So therefore, Rav Elazar says, the fact that you see in places where they do have camels, where they do keep it, that's reason enough to make it considered to be a useful plant, even in other places, because it just so happens they don't have camels, and if they did, they would use it. Whereas the Chachamim disagree. So the point is, therefore, so now, this family of Reuchel, they were doing that. They were having thorns grow in their vineyard. Rabbi Lazar goes l'shitasay and says that that would be kalayim, and therefore he says that now they deserve to die and be buried, and therefore that the Chachamim penalized them and took away this expensive kvina from them and gave it to their sister. Rabbi Pashkas, their sister, was not planting these thorns in the vineyard. Because Hefker based in Hefker. Whereas the Chum said, listen, they're not doing anything wrong anyway. They don't live in Arabia. There's nothing wrong with them having thorns in the vineyard. And therefore, if the Chachamim said that their mother's bequest goes to them, then that shows that that's valid even without a kinyan. All right. So the Gemara finishes off. Omer Rabbi Levi. We're allowed to make a kinyan when we're talking about making a kinyan on the nechosim of a shchivna. We can do such a kinyan even on Shabbos, meaning that Ashbam says, now you have cases, as we've learned in previous dafim, where you need a kinyan. For example, he's only giving away some of his nechosim, or you have cases where, as the Chachamim say in our Mishnah, you don't need a kinyan. But nevertheless, even though a kinyan is like mecha chomemker, because in effect what you're doing is the person who's receiving the thing is trading his handkerchief or his gartel or whatever it is for the thing that the other person is giving him. So it's like mecha chomemker, and you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. Nevertheless, you're allowed to do it in this case with a shchivna, v'loy lochosh l'divrei Rabbi Elazar, not because we have to be concerned about what Rabbi Elazar is saying that you need a kinyan always for a matnas shchivna. Ela shemati torif daiter olav, but because, as we've been saying all along, why is it that the Chacham made special takonis for shchivna is so that he doesn't get so he doesn't get mentally agitated and think that what he's going to do is not going to be valid. So therefore the Chachamim even allow the kinyan to be made on Shabbos, and now he has more of a smichus das that what he said will actually take place, and therefore we can do that even on Shabbos and not have to worry about the dinim of mecha chomemker on Shabbos. Tosfos mentions that you have other cases as well. You have certain other cases as well where we're makel on Shabbos when it comes to a shivna as far as certain things like this. An interesting, more widespread halacha that comes from this is Moshe writes in one of his trubas, if you have a person asks on Shabbos or Yom Tov that you should daven on his behalf. Now if he's in danger, then of course you do. You say Mishabenach for him or whatever. But otherwise, even if he's not, the same thing. You're going to be allowed to daven for him on Shabbos and not have to worry about that. You're asking for tzrochim on Shabbos and nevertheless, you're allowed to for the same reason. So here that Ashbam is saying that it applies whether the kinyan is necessary or not. Tosfos explains that even when the kinyan is actually necessary. And here we're saying, the Gemara was saying, had we been concerned about Rabbi Lazar's din, then we would necessarily need to do the kinyan, otherwise it wouldn't be valid. But the point is, whether it's actually necessary and it's actually accomplishing the transfer of the nechosim, or whether it's not, either way we can do it on Shabbos, the Chachamim are allowing it, Shema Titzurif Daiti Olav, in order that the guy can now pass away with a clear mind. There are actually poskim who learn differently that no, when the kinyan is completely unnecessary, then you're only doing it l'hafis daiter, just in order to make him feel better. Then you're allowed to, but not necessarily where the kinyan is actually where the kinyan is actually making a difference and actually making that the nechosim are transferring hands. So then it's not so simple. The Shulchan Aruch, actually, the Mechaber, actually brings two different opinions about that. First he brings from the Rambam that you can do the kinyan because it doesn't actually cause the transfer, and then he brings from the Tur that says that even if it's the kind where the kinyan is going to be in effect, that we want it to be irrevocable even if he recovers, so there the kinyan is necessary for that to take effect. So that would mean the fact that the Mechaber brings the Rambam's opinion first seems to imply that he holds like that, so therefore so so only So therefore, it would mean that only that it would only work only if it's the kind of Kenyan that's unnecessary, but not the kind that is, but not the kind that is necessary. And then the Rama brings, the Rashbam's opinion over here that says that it's even more so, that it's any kind of Kenyan, that any kind of Kenyan can be done on Shabbos for this purpose because Shema Titzrif Daita Allah. So the bottom line halacha is, it turns out is actually not so simple, but there are at least some kinds where you are allowed to, for that reason, that the Chachamim gave a break to a Shkivmanat because they want him to be able to be able to have an easy mind of it and not to be worried about what's going to happen. Okay. So